This podcast is brought to you by ClearBridge Investments. Meet an evolving economy confidently with ClearBridge Active Equities, the foundation of a resilient portfolio. ClearBridge, a Franklin Templeton company. Go to clearbridge.com to learn more.
Please stay tuned for important disclosure information at the conclusion of this episode. Welcome to the Investing Insights podcast from Morningstar. In this week's podcast, we explore two approaches to sustainable investing. Jackie Cook urges investors to make a positive impact with their portfolios, and Hortense Bioy shows us what to look for in an investment's sustainability claims. Let's get started. Here are Alyssa Stankiewicz from Morningstar Research Services and Hortense Bioy from Morningstar UK.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Stankiewicz. I'm a sustainability analyst within Morningstar Manager Research. At Morningstar, we've identified six distinct approaches to sustainable investing. These include applying exclusions, limiting ESG risk, seeking ESG opportunities, practicing active ownership, targeting sustainability themes, and assessing impact. Today we're speaking with Hortense Bioy, who is the Global Director of Sustainability Research within Morningstar Manager Research. Hi, Hortense.
Hi, Alyssa.
Today we're here to talk about two of these approaches, divestment, which is related to applying exclusions, and engagement, which is one form of practicing active ownership. Both of these movements are growing, which is leading to a debate, especially in the context of the climate crisis. What can you tell me about that?
Yes, you're absolutely right, Alyssa. And I think this is absolutely fascinating because both movements are really growing fast. Today, there are more than 1,300 institutions globally representing over $14 trillion that have committed to some form of for social divestment. A recent prominent example is three New York City pension funds, which announced that they were going to divest $4 billion worth of fossil fuel companies. At the same time, more asset managers and asset owners are saying that they are engaging with companies to try and improve the ESG practices and in the context of the climate crisis, to accelerate the transition to a low carbon economy.
So let's talk about the advantages and disadvantages of these approaches. Why might investors choose to divest?
Well, there are several reasons why a sustainability aware investor might want to divest from a stock or a particular sector. The first and most common reason is ethical. They want to avoid complicity with companies that don't align with the values. Other investors may want to divest to influence companies by increasing the cost of capital. This strategy seeks to hamper the company's ability to pursue investments in the activities that the investor dislikes.
Interesting. What about financial reasons to divest?
You're right. There are financial reasons also to divest. Some investors divest to reduce risk in the portfolio, especially if they think that those risks haven't been priced in by the market properly. For example, investors might divest from fossil fuel companies because of the various risks associated with climate change. And finally, an opportunistic argument to divest is to free up capital so you can invest in other, possibly more profitable companies.
What are the arguments against divesting? I know there's one big concern about forgoing returns.
Yes, that's right. There is always the possibility that the companies that you sell out of end up performing better than the companies you've bought with your divestment money. You could also miss out on opportunities. So if you avoid all oil and gas companies, for example, you might miss out on those companies that are transitioning to be competitive in a low carbon economy.
Interesting. So how effective is divestment at actually driving change?
Well, so far, actually, there is little evidence to show that divesting is influencing companies or increasing their cost of capital. Some research found that 20% of a stock would need to be sold for the cost of capital to increase, but that would set a high bar for effective divestment campaigns. There's also another counterargument to divestment. It's that when investors sell the shares of a company, they are bought by other investors. So divesting from an oil and gas company doesn't do anything to reduce its carbon emissions. Selling dirty assets could actually make things worse if these assets end up in private hands, because there is much less transparency in private markets than there is in public markets.
So a solution might be to stay invested in these companies and try to engage?
Yes, if, of course, it makes financial sense to stay invested in these companies. In this case, a responsible manager with the appropriate resources should engage with the companies, try and influence them so that they improve their practices and mitigate the risks that the asset managers would have identified. Engagement now can take many forms. Asset managers and asset owners can engage with companies through letters to CEOs, conversations with investor relations people, meeting with top executives and the board members. They can also do collaborative engagement to give more weight to their conversations.
So what would you say are some hallmarks of a good engagement strategy?
Well, what's really important when managers and asset owners engage with companies is that they set measurable expectations for improvement and that they put in place a clear escalation strategy. For example, if a company doesn't make sufficient progress towards the goals set by a manager, then the manager may vote against a company management and the board of directors, signaling the lack of confidence in the leadership's ability to address the company's risks. That's actually an increasingly popular strategy.
I know voting can be a powerful tool, but what if that alone doesn't prove effective?
Yeah, it's true that voting doesn't always work. And I think that's why divestment, or at least the possibility of divestment, remains an important tool to have in the toolkit. The absence of divestment threat would render engagement toothless. Now, I think to conclude, what we can say is that far from being mutually exclusive, engagement and divestment can be mutually reinforcing. And if a manager does decide to sell, a noisy exit is preferable then and more impactful than a silent one.
So ultimately, it's not that one approach is better than the other. The two actually go hand in hand. Thank you for your insight today.
Thank you for having me, Alyssa.
Expand your investing horizons and look to the long term with Morningstar's podcast, The Long View. Join hosts Christine Benz and Jeff Patak as they talk to influential leaders in investing, advice, and personal finance. Search for and subscribe to The Long View today. Now, Jackie Cook and Tom Lauricella from Morningstar Research Services discuss deforestation.
Hi, and welcome. I'm Tom Lauricella, editor for professional audiences at Morningstar. And I'm here today speaking with Jackie Cook, who's Director of Investment Stewardship Research at Morningstar. Jackie, thanks for being here today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So we're here today to chat about a very serious topic, and that's deforestation, which is probably one of the greatest threats that the world is facing. And you know, it's a key part of the climate risk that so many folks, and in particular investors as well, are concerned about. We recently had an article in which we discussed the hidden risks of deforestation in portfolios. And we just want to talk through some of the aspects of this that a lot of investors may not realize and understand about how deforestation actually plays out, where it shows up in their portfolios, and you know, what as an investor should they be thinking about in regards to deforestation. Mm-hmm. So the first question here is, we see deforestation, we see the pictures of the jungles being burnt down and bulldozed. But why is it an investment risk? Why should investors be concerned about deforestation?
Yeah, you know, so thinking about deforestation as an investment risk, I think of it on two levels. One is, as you say, deforestation is a global crisis, and it's driving climate change, it's driving biodiversity loss, it's driving species extinction, it's also, you know, driving people off their land. So it's a human rights crisis. A lot of indigenous peoples are affected by deforestation. So in that sense, it affects everybody and it affects investors, you know, creating financial risk across the system. So it's a market-wide risk and that transcends portfolios. But of course, some portfolios are going to be more exposed to deforestation risk because they're the companies in the supply chain that are part of the global commodities chain that contributes to deforestation are at an increased risk, especially now that international attention is being trained increasingly on this global crisis. So deforestation risk in portfolios would come down to, you know, your exposure to consumer brands, companies that source from the supply chain that ultimately leads to right. the forests, tropical forests, boreal forests from which agricultural commodities are extracted.
Right. I mean, many investors might look at their portfolio and say, I don't think I have any companies in here that are actually bulldozing rainforests. You know, I don't see that in my portfolio. So, you know, when you talk about supply chain, what do we really mean here? So what types of companies, what types of industries on a more specific level are we looking at? And how does deforestation make its way through that food chain, as it were?
Yeah. So if you look at your portfolio and you have consumer goods companies in there, you might have food brands like Kroger or Domino's Pizza. You might have companies like Procter & Gamble, Unilever. These companies are all sourcing raw materials for their products that come from that ultimately come from forests. Now, they would be sourcing them from trading companies like Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, Bungie. You know, those are some of the trading companies that sit, they're in the US, but then you actually have trading companies that sit in the exporting country as well. Wilmar, probably the largest supplier of palm oil globally, sits in Indonesia, you know, so there's this international trade in these global commodities, and these global commodities look pretty much, I mean, you know, it's a commodity. So once it enters the supply chain and is mixed with, you know, mixed with the same commodity from different sources, it's the same thing. Now, these trading companies source from producers. So, you know, sometimes there's some vertical integration. You've got the producers, you've got on the producer side, you might have the plantations, the growers, the logging companies with forest licenses, and then you've got the processors, the mills, and the those that, you know, prepare the raw material for the supply chain. So you might think of the supply chain in four groups. You've got the producers. You've got the processors, you've got the trading companies, you've got the consumer brands, but of course there can be vertical integration between
right.
these.
And there's also meat producers, right? There's, I mean, this is a prime source of deforestation, as we discovered in our story. I mean, a lot of the destruction of rainforests is to make room for cattle raising, right?
That's right. That's especially a problem in Brazil, in the Amazon. And in Brazil, you've got JBS. That's perhaps the biggest trader of beef in Brazil.
So, from an investment perspective, folks might look at their portfolio. They might have mutual funds that own these particular stocks. Particularly if they own a broad-based index fund, they're probably going to have some of these names in there. What's being done in the asset management industry to address some of these problems with deforestation? Are the big asset managers doing anything to say, hey, you need to make sure that the way you run your business is trying to avoid being connected with deforestation. Are they taking a stand anywhere?
In 2019, asset manager or investors got together to sign the investor statement on deforestation and forest fires in the Amazon. There's an example of investors getting together to come together with a single voice, because one of the problems, throughout the supply chain and even amongst investors is this collective action problem. So in the short term, you're better off sourcing your product from, clear-cut lands or lands that have been illegally burnt. It could be cheaper, and it could be, the product is indistinguishable. It's very difficult to trace. So the really important approach to solving this problem is solving the collective action problem at each stage of the supply chain. And so investors coming together to sign these agreements and commitments is very important. Friends of the Earth did a review of the investors who signed the investor statements on deforestation and forest fires in the Amazon in 2019, called Doubling Down, and found that the big three were not using their heft.
The big three are
BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, the big three asset managers. They were not using their heft to pressure consumer goods companies that they held in their portfolios to in turn pressure in the rest of the supply chain to do more in avoiding deforestation, particularly deforestation that was leading to forest fires in the Amazon. So once you've got these agreements in place, you also need these agreements to be monitored, and you need a level of transparency throughout the supply chain that allows civil society, advocacy groups, other investors to be able to see who is reaching their commitments and who's reneging on their commitments. A similar agreement exists across consumer brands companies. It was signed in 2010, called the Consumer Goods Forum Net Zero Deforestation Commitment. Unfortunately, it turns out in 2020 that consumer goods companies, very few of them, had met the commitments under this agreement. So
are we starting to see signs, though, that that the big three and other asset managers are starting to change their tune on this? I mean, there was a history where they were standing by and not doing very much. Climate change has really become much more of a front burner issue. We're seeing BlackRock's chief executive Larry Fink talking about climate. Are we starting to finally see any evidence anywhere that investors who care about deforestation can at least feel like maybe they're starting to turn a corner when it comes to doing something about this problem?
I think we are. And there's a few things I'd point to. One is, some emerging investor groups that are getting together to renew pledges and not only to make pledges, but to think through how you affect change within your portfolios and in so doing throughout the supply chain. Finance for Biodiversity Pledge was signed in 2020. So it's a small group of investors, but that has the potential to grow and become very influential, because one of the areas that they commit to is engaging on deforestation. Likewise, the Natural Capital Finance Alliance, another investor group getting together to think through the tools and data that investors need to be able to affect change in their in their portfolios. But perhaps the most recent and obvious piece of evidence that we have that even the largest asset managers are getting very serious about addressing deforestation is Procter & Gamble's vote last October. And that's, of course, the vote that caught our attention and that led to the article that we wrote, which was 68% of shareholders that voted on that resolution, which was put forward by Green Century, asking the company to create more transparency into how it is sourcing its agricultural commodities and how it's and what sort of pressure it's bringing to bear on its supply chain, right, to ensure that its supply chain is deforestation free. BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street all supported this resolution.
Right.
And this was against the recommended vote of Procter & Gamble's board. So, that's really significant. 68% of shareholders opposed Procter & Gamble's board in voting for that resolution. And that resolution resolution was actually quite powerful. It went further than previous deforestation resolutions did.
So from an investor standpoint who's looking at this issue and looking for their portfolio, what sorts of things should they be looking for? How these fund companies are pressuring companies in the supply chain to do more work on this front, disclosure? Is it evaluating the actual companies that are in their portfolios? Going to other resources? What would be just a couple steps for the average investor to take here who cares about deforestation?
Right. I mean, for the average investor, there are some options to look. You can look at the portfolio itself and evaluate. And there are, I'll point you to like deforestation-free funds, a website where you can go and you can look and see, what is the deforestation exposure of a portfolio. So there's some tools, Forests and Finance, they're tracking banks and investors' exposure to deforestation. So there's some online tools that you can use to investigate exposure to deforestation at the portfolio level. But I would actually go further and say, it's really powerful when asset managers use the holdings that they do have to effect change. Mm-hmm. And so there, what I would do is look at the proxy voting guidelines of the asset managers offering the funds in which you're invested. Do their proxy voting guidelines provide a position on deforestation? Look at their engagement reports and their engagement policies to see whether deforestation has been identified as one of the key themes. And look at the kinds of materials that asset managers put out. Increasingly asset managers are putting out educational materials on their websites for investors to deepen their understanding of key ESG issues. And so, I have personally seen materials on deforestation, and I think that goes a long way to educating the end investor and explaining the kinds of actions that the asset manager may take to affect change through their investments.
Hey, Jackie, thank you so much for being here today, talking about this really important story that affects basically the entire globe. Jackie Cook, Director of Investment Stewardship Research at Morningstar, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
And lastly, Hortense Bioy explains greenwashing.
In the context of investing, greenwashing is making unsubstantiated or misleading claims about the sustainability characteristics and benefits of an investment product. Greenwashing comes in a variety of shades and intentions. And I think it's worth distinguishing between two types of greenwashing. There is intentional greenwashing, which is when asset managers overclaim and oversell what they are actually providing. And this type of greenwashing is clearly problematic and corrosive to long-term trust and credibility. There is another form of greenwashing that often comes down to an expectation gap between investors and asset managers. So here, there's no real intention from the asset manager to overstate the green credentials of a product, but the investor expects more. Because there is no common definition of green, the investor has a certain idea of what green should look like, without realizing sometimes that it is not practical or in their best interest. Now, both types of greenwashing can be largely addressed through disclosure and investor education. Asset managers need to be upfront about what's green or sustainable about their products and report on the ESG characteristics of the products. Company as well must do the same and also be transparent about their business practices. At the investor level, greenwashing is a problem because the investor could be disappointed or feel cheated. Because they have their own idea of what green is, when they look at their portfolios, they may see companies that they didn't expect to see. For example, fossil fuel companies. Greenwashing is also a problem for the planet and society. If money is not flowing into activities that are necessary to solve environmental issues like climate change and social issues like rising inequalities, for example. To spot greenwashing and avoid it, due diligence is key. First, an investor needs to look beyond a fund's name or label and understand what the fund's objective is. What does the fund aim to do? Is it a fund that aims to invest in companies with lower ESG risk? Does it aim to invest in companies that offer solutions to the world's biggest challenges? Does the fund claim to have some sort of impact? Then the fund's claims need to be tested. An investor needs to look under the hood, look at the fund's holdings and their ESG characteristics. Many funds with a climate theme, for example, don't actually invest only in green companies. They may invest in so-called transition companies. These are companies that today don't necessarily have good green credentials. They may even have exposure to fossil fuels. But these companies have the intention and plans to improve their environmental profile. An investor must feel comfortable with this type of companies. Morningstar and other organizations provide ESG metrics and ratings that enable investors to assess the sustainability profile of investment products. The key is to find the right data points. Often, an investor will have to use a combination of metrics to get the complete picture and make sure that the investment aligns with the sustainability or green preferences and the financial objectives.
That does it for this week's Investing Insights podcast from Morningstar. We hope you have enjoyed our program and we welcome your feedback. Please send your comments and questions to podcast@morningstar.com. From everyone here at Morningstar, thanks for listening. This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. Opinions expressed are as of the date of recording. Such opinions are subject to change. The views and opinions of guests on this program are not necessarily those of Morningstar Inc. and its affiliates. Morningstar and its affiliates are not affiliated with this guest or his or her business affiliates unless otherwise stated. Morningstar does not guarantee the accuracy or the completeness of the data presented herein. The podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered tax advice. Please consult a tax and/or financial professional for advice specific to your individual circumstances. Morningstar Research Services, LLC is a subsidiary of Morningstar Inc. and is registered with and governed by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Morningstar Research Services shall not be responsible for any trading decisions, damages, or other losses resulting from or related to the information, data analysis, or opinions or their use. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of principal. Individuals should seriously consider if an investment is suitable for them by referencing their own financial position, investment objectives, and risk profile before making any investment decision.